Okay, I think we'll get started.
Well, I know we're going to get started because
it's starting. Okay, our agenda today is as follows. I mentioned that next Tuesday we have this tour at the VA, which seems to be on track. And we have people signed up to be drivers and passengers, and the list is here if you need to make any changes. When I pass that around, please add your name or do whatever. And in addition, I'm passing around for the drivers maps of the of the VA and how to get there. And so Stanford is over here, and this is Unipro Serra Boulevard over here. So you go out the back way, you know, toward the dish, and go toward Page Mill Road. Past Page Mill Road, it turns into Foothill Expressway, and make a left at Hillview, which is a stoplight, and then an immediate right onto Miranda, and that sort of curves around and parallels Foothill Expressway, and you'll see the VA, and turn in where the American flag is, and follow this map. So the American flag is like over here. And go in here and park on this parking lot over here because you're going to be entering the Building 7 over here. This is the main building, the large building in front of you, but we're going into spinal cord injury. And there's an entrance here and an entrance here, but we want the middle one because that's closest. And it's sort of, once you get inside, you make the first right into the F wing. So right, left, right, and you're going for room F-125, which would be is a conference room where we'll all sort of collect, and from there we'll go on whatever tour they have planned. And then after the tour, we'll come back to that room for Dr. Graham Creasy's talk, and hopefully that'll be done at 5:30. It ought to be pretty exciting, and for students that are working on projects, there's lots of potential for to find project partners with some of the veterans there, and I hope they'll be available, so you can talk to them and introduce yourself and things like that. Any questions about any of this stuff? And I sort of want to limit it to people in class and interested community members. I don't want to really publicize this to everybody because they can't take a lot of people, and if you know somebody who wants to go, that's fine, but just don't let everybody in the world know. Okay, I got email from one team that has formed and told me what project they're working on, and I talked to a couple other people on another team, but I think there's still one team that's sort of outstanding. If you have indeed formed a team and selected a project, please let me know formally. And it'd be good to think about a name for your team. And down the line, you're going to need you may want to name the project, the device you're working on. In addition, some teams have come up with logos, which are good for identifying, yourself as a team. Instead of a name, you have a logo as well. So, that's that. So I'm going to pass around the sign-up sheet, which has the map and the carpooling information. And I'm also going to pass around the slide handouts for today as well. And if anybody is missing an old handout, I got those around. So if you missed a class and want some paper handouts, that'll be good for you to do that. For people that are working on projects, I mentioned last week that the process is important, and a way of documenting that process is through pictures and video. So be sure as you go along to take pictures of what you're doing, so you can document it, because it makes it a lot easier to present. And because a picture has a lot of words associated with it, so. And you can get the point across a lot easier than trying to explain it. And short videos are also important for devices that move. And if you don't have access to a digital camera or a camcorder, you can see me. I can make one available to you as needed for your project. Any questions on any of this stuff so far? Everybody doing okay? Everybody happy?
Okay. A couple of discussion items, getting back to these things again, you know, the Who is Disabled list. Has everybody read this and considered it? So, a grade school child has an accident which severs the tip of his little finger on his left hand. Well, you might not think that that's much of a problem because it's, you know, little finger, just the tip. But, you know, if he's doing something with that fingertip, like playing a violin, then that will prevent him from doing it, so he or she could be disabled. But if somebody fabricates a prosthetic fingertip for him that he can use to continue playing, well, maybe he isn't so disabled. Any comments? What's the underlying concept here? Shannon?
I would argue, like, just because it's a musical situation, yeah. I would argue that even with an artificial fingertip, he's still disabled because it's not the same as the original. And even if it's exactly the same as, like, an exact human copy nerves and all human fingertip, yeah, it's still not quite the same. And just because of, like, musical interpretation and stuff like that, I would still make the argument that he's still very disabled with that just because it's been replaced and it's different.
So, so he's not a whole person.
Mm-hmm.
So even if it's just a little bit.
Yeah. Well, okay. In this case, because he would be using it in order to play the instrument.
Okay.
Yes. I guess going by our original definition, which is something that hinders one from taking full advantage of life's opportunities. I mean, I guess whether he's disabled or not, it depends on whether this artificial fingertip impairs his ability to do other things that he likes to do, not just playing music.
Okay. Claire, did you have something? No.
I guess, like, being open to music, even if we're just playing music, I feel like he's still a disability.
So if he didn't play music, would that change the situation? If he didn't play the violin?
I mean, like, just, like, if I never, ever bothered using my toes for anything, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, but if I had lost one, I feel like...
Right. Oh, and did you have a comment?
Well, I think you just asked the question. I was going to ask, I mean, if it doesn't hinder you in everyday life, you said, if it isn't a disability, then there could be people who have, like you said, fingertip missing, that haven't yet experienced it.
So it may limit a person if they wanted to get into violin. They may want to choose something else. So maybe it doesn't afford them the full range of response of opportunities if they had this fingertip missing.
Or it may cause them to feel that they can't try certain things. It's
right.
Certainly more about emotional.
Okay. I'll accept that. There's no right or wrong answers here.
I was just going to say, I think the Americans with Disabilities Act says something like, I don't know exactly what the language is, but it says something like it affects one of the major life activities. I don't know what that's defined as, but that's...
See, no, that's a problem. There are no really hard definitions. Kevin, did you have a comment?
The thing about ADA is that you wouldn't be calling a restaurant and asking for an accommodation.
Okay.
So it doesn't really pertain.
Okay. So it's...
So in terms of the ADA, it's not disabled because you wouldn't be getting any accommodations.
Okay. Well, in any ADA situation... Right.
In terms of the ADA, I guess I'm saying that in that definition of disabled, you would consider disabled.
Okay. So the ADA has their definition of disability, which may not be, this person may not be qualified for. Okay. All right. Well, I think that's enough for that one, but I got another one here, and I sort of brought this up on the first day of class. Very talented, motivated young adults don't have jobs, extreme financial burden in their families, undereducated because they have yet to complete their education, no current employment prospects, and now students fall into that category. I'm sure people have comments about this. Claire?
Like,
technically we all dropped out of college right now, we would be able to get, well, we wouldn't necessarily be able to get a job, but we'd be able to get as good a job as anyone, as right. like a lot of people out there. Right?
Okay.
Like, we could get like a college education.
So do you think education is like a rehabilitation process that you're still working on?
I think it's like an advancement process, like okay. an extra thing. You know, it's not like a life, you know, I don't know. Well,
okay.
I kind of agree, I think, with what you're saying with, like, education is kind of, like, an extra step. Like, you're saying, like, we could go out right now and, like, drop out of school and get a job and support ourselves fine and not be considered, like, I wouldn't consider it even a group of very intelligent and motivated young adults don't have jobs disabled, because we could have jobs, technically, if we weren't pursuing education right now. It's kind of like a choice that we make in order to, in the long run, you know, reap the benefits of being further educated.
So there's a time issue here. I mean, you're in a process that you're learning something to be really productive in society, but you're not quite there yet.
Yeah, it's almost, and, I don't know, it's almost like, to put this into, like, a situation maybe more disability, like, a runner who can run normally fine undergoes knee surgery to make something better. So for that period of time, he's kind of out of commission, but he's not, I wouldn't consider him disabled because he made the choice and he's going to come out, you know, all right and normal or improved on the other end.
Okay. Okay. You know, it sort of brings up the concept in my mind that, you know, maybe when you're really young, you know, you have a lot to learn, and as you grow older, you learn about academics and society and get experience and skills and stuff like that. And sometime toward the end of your life, you know, maybe you're, because of old age, you have less capacity for certain things. So is there a graph of abilities versus time as you get older? And so is there a peak someplace, you know, where at that point in time you're the most able-bodied you're ever going to be? These are just questions for thought.
I was just going to go back to the talking about education, because it's right. something that you chose to do, so that being denied you didn't create a disability. Nobody brought up about the guy who was playing the violin, that was a choice, it wasn't necessarily right. something that was supporting his life.
Well, I'm sure that, you know, people can choose not to go to school.
Right. And they can choose not to play soccer.
Play violin, so...
Right.
If they choose not to, are they? They'll be maybe less productive to society. Is that an issue that the definition of disability should include? Is there an assumption of education? Is there an assumption of physical abilities?
I think it's more that if there's a different view in general of society, people who are the access to something which isn't the main part of their life, which might be a luxury.
Okay.
Work for a recreational organization that serves people with disabilities. You see that a lot.
Well, this brings up the point. Is education a luxury or a necessity? We can go on and on about this. I want to thank everybody for their discussion. But I want to bring up a point. You know, today's a pretty historic day, and you know, I watched the inauguration this morning, and it was on this day 48 years ago where JFK had his inauguration, and I was just sort of thinking, you know, back through history about you know, the choices that society and the world has made to to, you know, ignore certain people or enslave them, disenfranchise them, make them enemies, things like that. But in all these cases, you can see that in the long run, it was wrong. You know, if slavery was still in effect, we'd be in a much different situation today. And in my mind, you know, it's not if you're you know, of a particular race or color or in a particular country or in a particular city or state or whatever. You know, it's what's appeared that matters. And I think, you know, everybody can contribute. And it's really a shame that people have been, you know, segments of the population have been put aside. But, you know, the good thing is that
we can all benefit, you know, once we know that that's wrong. Does everybody understand that?
Not sure I got that across the best, but that's what I was thinking today. So let's move on. On Thursday, we're going to hear from Jessica Connor, and she's a University of Michigan alumni, just like I am. And she's going to be talking about inventorship and intellectual property, and also talking a little bit about Stanford's Office of Technology Licensing. And this is important because if you're working on a product here at Stanford, this is information you need to know if you want to start a company or get a patent and things like that. So it should be very interesting. But today we have Jane and John, and they're both from TransAccess, which is a company in San Jose that they'll talk about. Jane joined TransAccess in 1999, and she's the manager of ergonomics and assistive technology services, and she's been performing evaluations and training for persons with various disabilities. She has a BA in sociology and MS in occupational therapy from San Jose State, and she's been working with individuals with disability in a variety of settings, such as acute, assisted living, home health, and in the community. And she's presented at various conferences, such as the CSUN conference in LA, the Disability Management Employer Coalition, and California Secondary Transition Community, and San Jose State University, Samuel Merritt College, and now she has to add in Stanford University. And John has a BA in English from UC Davis, and he has a Master in Occupational Therapy from Samuel Merritt College. Those are the two OT schools in the area. And certification as Assistive Technology Practitioner from RESNA, the Rehab Engineering and Assistive Technology Society of America. John's background is helping students learn word processing, spreadsheets, and voice recognition software. He also started at TransAccess in 99 as a computer access technology specialist. And began managing the access technology van, which I hope they'll talk about. And the van brings assistive technology evaluations and trainings into the homes and workplaces of people with disabilities. So it's my pleasure to welcome them to Stanford and to have them present today. Thanks.
I'll let me make a call. Great, thank you so much for having us here. We're really excited to talk about different types of assistive technology. Like Dave was saying, we've both been doing this for almost 10 years now, and it's still just as exciting as it was the first day, but now we kind of know more than we did back then, so it was just kind of stressful starting at first, trying to learn all the different types of technology, and just seeing it evolve over the years has been really nice. That's kind of the neat thing about being in this field for 10 years now, is just seeing how even something like voice recognition, when we first started, you know, the recognition rate wasn't that great. You had to kind of speak one word at a time or one sentence at a time to how it evolved today. So if we have enough time, John's going to do a demo on that, on voice recognition. Do you have the thing to switch over? So just to give you a little bit of background, we have, over the years, our in-house assistive technology center has kind of been getting smaller and smaller. And the reason for that is because we want to be out in the community where people are. So we take all our equipment, and this is just a handful of things. We have so much stuff back in our office, in our assistive technology center. But basically, we want to take what the client needs and bring it to where they're at. So if they're a student, we either go to their home or to their school. If they're working and they need some kind of either accommodation or ergonomic evaluation, we bring it to their work site because we kind of find it's, you know, you can set up an artificial environment in our office, but that doesn't really make too much sense. So we load everything up and John manages the van and we just take that out to wherever the person is. We cover all over the Bay Area. Poor John's in Salinas and Monterey a lot, but pretty much we cover the East Bay. There's several different centers in the Bay Area. That kind of we kind of do some of the same things, but a little bit different. So it's nice in the Bay Area that there's still a handful of assistive technology practitioners. Let's see. So what we'll do today is we'll talk about different kinds of keyboards, mice, hardware, and software solutions that we use for our clients. And again, all our clients have a disability. And it ranges from something like carpal tunnel. Maybe they just have arthritis in their neck, or they could be have quadriplegia. So really just one spectrum to another. And then we also see clients that have multiple disabilities. So it's real important to have that background in not so much just the equipment, but really looking at what the client's goals are and how they're affected by things and what they want to do with the technology. In a nutshell, for the goals, what we do during our evaluations and training is that we want to use the hardware so we can provide the greatest success possible. And again, that success depends on what they want to do. Of course, because we're using the computer access part of it, they all want to use the computer for something. So if they're working and they have pretty severe carpal tunnel or tendonitis, we want to make sure their workstation is set up so they can still use their computer. But if it's someone who's just more of a quality of life issue, we get a lot of clients that sometimes we go in the hospitals, but that's a little acute for most of our clients that we see. But they're in the home environment. They're not working. They're severely disabled. And they want to go on the Internet and see what the Internet's all about or be able to email their family and friends. So we set a lot of clients up that, you know, you look at them and you think, oh, my gosh, they're so severely disabled. There's no way they can use a computer. But, you know, that's the fun part of our job is that we get to go in and meet with a client, meet with their family, find out what they want to do, and actually set them up with the technology so they can start doing emails and surfing the Internet. Just a brief thing on how we're funded, because most people want to know how we get our money. We're a nonprofit organization, and we've been around for 20 or so years. And we got an endowment fund from a for-profit side many years ago. But we also get funding through Department of Rehab. We see some VA clients every once in a while. And then we also get companies that call us for the ergonomic part of it. So those are our main funding sources, a lot through Department of Rehab. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, so that's a state-funded, so every state has their own. California calls it Department of Rehabilitation. Most other states call it Vocational Rehabilitation. So it's a publicly funded program for anyone that has a documented disability. And what that really means is that they have a doctor sign off that they have a disability. So anyone who acquires a disability or is born with a disability, doesn't matter, they don't make any distinction. And their goal is to later down the line get a job. So it's vocational oriented. But they do have a program there for people who are blind or with low vision who can't work. So they do have homemaker services for them. But yeah, it's a really good program for anyone who needs services. So a lot of our assistive technology is covered under that through Department of Rehab. But as you know, with the state, they're kind of cutting a lot of services, but technically they're not supposed to cut services for people with disabilities. So thanks for the question. Okay, so how much time do we have? Oh, my gosh. Okay, so I'm going to talk really fast. And I'll just we have about 20 minutes, right? Oh, 5:30. Okay. But feel free to ask any questions as I pass some things around. And what I thought I'd do is just hold up a handful of things. You're more than welcome to come up after, or if you want to see us at our work site and just get a better feel for what we do. So this one here is obviously it's called a Big Keys keyboard, you know, kind of a no-brainer there. But the keys itself are 4 times larger than your standard key size. And does anyone want to take a stab at who would benefit from something like this? Yes. Exactly. Perfect. That's exactly who's appropriate for something like this. We've had a lot of clients that had, and it depends on what, it doesn't have to be a specific disability, but in just my case and using this over the years, I've had many clients that had cerebral palsy. So when they're typing on a standard keyboard, they're hitting multiple keys at a time, and it's frustrating. Yes?
Why are the colors
Oh, okay. So this one this one comes in different versions. It's either colored for some people who need kind of more color coding in it, and it could be maybe they had a stroke and it's affecting certain parts of their brain, so they need the color coding to it. Like the vowels and the Y are in yellow. The reds are for the red. It comes in an ABCD layout. So you can imagine if someone's never used a keyboard before because of their disability, looking at a QWERTY keyboard is just like wacky. You know, there's like no sense out of this. So it's nice that there's different keyboard layouts. Yes?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, so it's a little frustrating if you're used to a standard layout. But it's just the way they laid it out to get all the keys to fit in the right way. I don't think there was any particular reason why the M was here. I think they just considered for someone who had difficulty using a computer or a standard keyboard that, you know, just putting the M over here wasn't that big of a deal.
There are other really strange things about this keyboard. And why don't I just... some other things about it is that the shift key is actually a space bar. And then the control and all the leads is always a little hard to find on the keyboard. All of my keys that are here, which is very strange. So, like Jane was saying, there's other layouts. Like, we wouldn't recommend it for somebody who didn't work. We recommend it for, like, the black on white on standard keyboard, which is larger. It actually has a Windows key on it. Has all the keys that you're used to. But this was a particular one made for children. Or someone who maybe trained someone else on a keyboard, like, it's the white key. The white key, you know, it's something supposed to help the person's training them. Or it can be for whatever reason. What we like about the keyboard is that you kind of use it for a lot of different reasons. For training or for people with similar difficulty. Actually, what's funny is what the first people think of is, oh, so it's for vision. Because someone in the back row can actually see this, but it's actually for birth control. But it's also helpful for someone with vision problems.
Yeah, and I'm going to stand up here, too. Oh, do you guys want us to pass this around?
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, I've had clients that the first time they actually typed their name on this keyboard, they had no misspellings, and it's just like this really great moment. You know, seems kind of minor, but when they're able to type their whole name without hitting backspaces more than they are the actual letters, it's pretty neat. So this one is kind of like the opposite of the big keys. This is really helpful for someone who doesn't have the range of motion as they would with a normal keyboard. You had a client that you recommended this one for?
Yes. This student had cerebral palsy, and even reaching for the keyboard on a laptop was hard for him. Because there's that space, right? There's that wrist rest. So his helpers would have to move it a little bit closer for him each time. And just that little bit of movement required someone else to help him. So in order to be more independent, he wanted something else that would work better for him. And I had brought a bunch of keyboards, and I just brought this up as a joke. It's just so funny looking. And it's like, I was kind of not sure what to do with this client. And then I brought this out, and he's like, his eyes, you know, opened up. He's like, oh, this is what he was looking for. He wanted, because he has really slender fingers, and it was just difficult for him to use a big keyboard. And he could bring it right up to him. So it could always be like this. He wouldn't have to ask someone to bring up the keyboard or bring up the laptop for him. So it was a very helpful, like, independent kind of moment for him.
Wow.
But you also, if you notice, it also has a funny layout. There's some keys that are in different places or not existent at all. It's just one of those things you have to adjust to. You want it that small.
This is just a joke. Okay, so this one here is kind of more of an ergonomic type keyboard because you can tent it, you can split it. But every product that we look at, whether it's commercially available or through just an assistive technology vendor, we always look at, well, who could benefit from it? You know, what are the pros and cons of each? And it's nice that they came back out with this one because many years ago they used to have something like this, which worked out really nice for clients that had contractures where, you know, even if it was split, it didn't work. They needed something more at a different, like maybe one was at this angle, one was like that. And you can get a longer cord or you can untether it. Or do you have to, you can get a longer cord. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I just have some other keyboards, but basically it's a little bit of a duplicate there. So I'll get into ways to control the cursor. This one here is called a QuadJoy, and what it does is it clamps to a table, and it has a little mouse stick that comes out of it. And it's a way for someone to control the computer cursor with just their mouth. So we see a lot of clients that have spinal cord injuries, pretty high-level spinal cord injuries, where they don't have the arm movement. Some do, some don't. And they want to be able to still use the computer by a different means. So it just clamps on. Oh, yeah. Just don't put your mouth on it. And then the way you would click is either sip or puff air, and it's just very slight sip or puff. Or you can hook up what's called a switch. Thank you. And there's a million different switches out there. That one comes with a different adapter. But basically, it's just like a converter box, or the switch plugs directly into it. This one here, any kind of movement that they have. There's infrared switches. We used one with a lady with just her eye blink would trigger the switch. You have the sip and puff, rocker switches, bigger switches, really tiny micro switches, just any kind of switch to activate the click. Sorry, you get the first one coming through here.
We'll just hold this one up here just because it's a little bit awkward to help.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes it would obviously activate.
Yeah, I had a client that was in a hospital, and she had such a high level stroke that really the only movement she had was blinking her eyes and just slight finger movement, and that's all she really had. So we didn't want to set the eye blink switch to her eyes because she was just having some eye issues. So we attached it to her finger. But that's kind of the tricky part because, you know, we want to make sure that whoever is left in the room, you know, the family members can duplicate what we do too. But we set it to your finger, and every time she moved it, it activated the scanning software. So it started reading out different letters for her so she could start typing that way. Mm-hmm. Oh, right, right. Yeah. So this is another way of moving the cursor. This is called a head mouse. And like this is for the laptop, and what it would do is it'll just attach to here. There's some attachments to it. But what this is looking for is just one of these little reflective dots. It's just an infrared signal. Either goes on their forehead, their baseball cap, the rim of their glasses, wherever they have good movement. And so wherever they turn their head, the cursor follows. And the way that they would select different words or letters is on-screen keyboard, which is like a virtual keyboard that appears on the computer desktop. And the way they would click is either using a switch like that or what's called dwelling software, which means that if they dwell over the letter J for whatever preset amount of time that they determine, it'll click it for them. So I'll just pass this one around. Yes?
Mm-hmm. On average, the average location is that going to become the neutral spot? I know what you're asking. But
yeah.
For this particular one, you kind of recenter the arrow to where you are. So, unfortunately, in order to do that, I think you have to either turn it off and turn it back on again by unplugging it, or have the client move their head to one side and kind of reorganizes where the arrow, where your pointer is. Mm-hmm. So that kind of recenters it. Do you mean like a neutral point for not clicking so you can rest?
No, I think...
Oh, that's... I'm sorry, for scanning. That depends on the software.
It depends what you're using.
It just depends on what you're using. Usually when we train people, we just say, you know, make the neutral point either a blank spot on the keyboard or your document, wherever you're working on the desktop. Mm-hmm. There wouldn't be a place to turn it off. And that's... It depends on the software. It was
yeah.
Like a point where it
stop type.
Right.
You can turn on and off the scan portion. That's as far as I know about neutral points.
Yeah, I think it does depend on what software you're using for that. And the two last devices that we passed around, like I mentioned, they're very helpful for someone with very high-level spinal cord injury. And it's funny because, you know, a lot of the clients we used to meet are just younger guys in the spinal cord injury, and they all thought, okay, we're going to go for the cool stuff. You know, we want the stuff that the dot on our forehead, we can control it and kind of wow everyone. But, you know, we told them, try out both of them, see what you think, because there's different movements that you're making with them. And what I found, I don't know if John had a different experience, is that they eventually ended up going with the one with the mouse stick one, because it was just something they could just roll right up to and just start using it. They didn't have to worry about so much the head movements that go with the head mouse. You know, they started all getting sore necks for a while, so it's just kind of interesting to see. But we always talk to people beforehand to let them know what they might experience, so they're not going to get a different injury from using some assistive technology software. So this here is just a joystick, but it's kind of a different one. It's not like a gaming joystick. It's really useful for someone with hand tremors. So if they have hand tremors, the cursor will still go pretty smooth across the screen. And all the buttons are recessed, so you know they're not constantly hitting right-click every time they have a hand tremor. And then they can slow down and speed up the mouse with a click on the trackball or on the joystick. How am I doing on time? Am I running into yours? Oh, okay. So I'll just talk about this one here. This was originally, we're in a really nice position that we get a lot of manufacturers or developers that contact us, and they want to talk about what they developed and what kind of clients could benefit from this. This one here, we met with a manufacturer that came up with this keyboard, and it's kind of wild looking. Originally it was for gamers, and what you could do is program every button to do something different. So what we looked at is how would this help a lot of our clients that have contractures in their hands and their hands can't use a normal keyboard, standard type keyboard. So these all just twist off here. They all have a corresponding number. So once you program what this number does, you could put it anywhere on here that fits their hand. So it's pretty neat.
Yeah, I was at the Co-Product Expo a couple years ago.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it was neat meeting with the developer of this. And let's see. Okay, how about one last thing? I could, like, go on forever showing you guys stuff, but this one here is a roller bar, and this is more of an ergonomic kind of device, although we do have some clients with different disabilities that could use it. The keyboard just sits on here, and once you feel it, you'll kind of get an idea of what I'm talking about, but it's a real smooth movement. We see a lot of clients that have repetitive strain in the right arm because they're reaching for that mouse a lot. But this one here, they have it right in front, and they can just move the mouse this way. And it's hardly any kind of motion that they have to make. And then you just click on that or the other buttons on there. So, let me see here. Okay, one last thing. This is just a trackball that you just use with your thumb or wherever you want to set it up. If they are using a mouse stick, then you would have to have this mounted somehow. So I could do the clicking. Sorry, I know you're trying to type, and I keep handing things to you. Okay. Okay, so my last slide before I hand this over to John. I had a client that's a software engineer in the Bay Area, and he had, I'm not sure what his disability is, I can't remember what it is, but basically what it translated into, he used a power wheelchair, he had assistance at work, but the main motion that he was able to make was a little bit of shoulder movement and a little bit of finger movement. So if he had to type, say if this was, his mouse that was placed here, he'd have to kind of move his body over to get his arm to swing over. and then he would type with an on-screen keyboard. So his issue was that when he was in a conference, at a conference table with his coworkers, he wasn't able to get close enough because his wheelchair would, the arms would hit the table, so he couldn't put his laptop on there and use a mouse. So what I did with him is I had to see him several different times to take measurements and kind of find out what his need was, because it was a little ambiguous at the time. But what I did is I flipped over a attachable mouse tray, just a portable mouse tray, and I ended up putting it the other way because his wheelchair was able to fit underneath better. And then I took two sheets of plexiglass, and because he used an optical mouse, I couldn't leave it clear because then his mouse wouldn't move right. So I took a really thin mouse pad, turned it over, and I had a machinist kind of cut the plexiglass. And then I just used from Michael's, like, little glue dots, which are like the best thing next to duct tape. So I just used these little glue dots in there because I wanted to make sure that it wasn't going to reflect with his optical mouse. And we just put a little pad there so it could kind of block the mouse from going any further. And at the time, he really liked it. He said it was going to work out great and it solved all his problems. So I was pretty happy with that until I followed up with him about a month later, and he thought, you know, I got this other mouse and it worked out great. You know, I'm fine with just using this mouse. So it's like, okay, well, maybe someone else could use it there. But so it's going to be, you know, it's just a constant following up with a client to see what works, what doesn't work. But so we'll see. It's kind of an ongoing process with that one. So thank you. I'll turn it over to John, and he'll talk about different software solutions. And then do I have to hold this down here?
Thank you.
So the training now, when we were both going through school, it was a bachelor's degree, but since they have since changed it over, and we were lucky enough to go through the master's program, different colleges or different universities that we went to, but basically I think it's a 5-year degree now to get your master's degree in occupational therapy. And it's just been a really nice fit for us, having the background of disabilities and looking at like the holistic picture. The whole client and what they need, and it's all client-centered, so it was just a really good fit in getting into assistive technology. Just kind of interesting because when I went to get my master's at San Jose State, there wasn't any course on assistive technology, whereas Daniel Merritt, you had a year?
A little bit.
Yeah. So, but it's such a nice fit for the two branches. Yes? Okay, that's a great question. There are several different assistive technology suppliers, and some products you have to just go through the manufacturer, but that's kind of rare because they want to sell theirs to as much people as possible. If you want to check out different ones, check out infogrip.com, and they're down in Ventura, and they're excellent AT reseller. And the other one is up in Petaluma, Access Ingenuity, and they also do assistive technology, but they also do a lot for blind and low vision clients too. So I think between the two, you'll have a pretty good overview of it, but if you just Google assistive technology, you'll get tons. As far as clients trying things out, you know, we try and make sure we have a lot in it stocked in our assistive technology center so we can loan them out to people, but the independent living centers now throughout the state, they network where they do have on hand different types of assistive technology. So you can go on their website and see if there's like an eye gaze system or a particular keyboard or software that the client might need so they can borrow it. It's a nice like loan library for assistive technology. So it's nice to see that finally got in the works this past year.
Right.
So thank you for your question.
Yeah, in fact, if the loan library doesn't have it, they'll
they have to purchase it, or they might purchase it and then loan it out to you. So I'm going to go to the next slide on software solutions. And I'm going to talk about learning disabilities, software, but I hate kind of pigeonholing software, because really, Dragon Naturally Speaking, which is on here, is not learning disability software. It's not even any kind of software except for someone who wants to use their voice to type. But we put it in certain categories because we know it's helpful for our certain clients. So I'm just going to start in the bottom of this list and kind of work up. Has anyone heard of WordQ? It does. Anybody else? WordQ, I just finally figured out what WordQ stands for. I think the idea is queuing up or lining up, because what it does is as you're typing, it tries to guess what you're trying to type. And whatever everyone mentions, especially when I talk to students about this, they mean, oh, like on the phone. Yeah, like on your phone. When you're texting someone and it tries to guess what word you're trying to type, and a lot of people get actually very annoyed by that because it's trying to write up words that you don't want. But for people with learning disabilities, just by seeing the correct word or seeing it spelled correctly is very helpful for them to keep on going with the sentence. What a lot of people do is who have learning disabilities or have like dyslexia, it's just very difficult for them to write long sentences or sentences with long words. they'll keep their sentences really, really short. And we're getting comments from teachers who want, they want their students to write longer. So I'll just show what it's like with just by typing. So I have WordQ running up here. Oh, forgot to switch over. Sorry about that. I have, now I have to explain what I was doing because I thought you could see what I was doing. I have Microsoft Word running. It's just the big blank page. And then the WordQ toolbar is up in the corner, up there. And it tells me it's working because it has this blank list ready for me to go. So I'm just going to write down, what is today? Today is Wednesday? Okay. January. And then if I can't spell it, what it does is it, as I wrote in J-A-N for January, it gives me a list of words that might be the possible words January. I can choose from. And what I can do is either with their mouse or with the keyboard.
Janitor, janitors, dangling. Dangled.
I can listen to each word to make sure it's the word I want. Or if I can just see it, I can just say, oh, that's the one I want, and I press 1 because I want January.
January.
And then, of course, can you see that? Yeah, Word also puts up its own kind of guess of what you're trying to say. Yes, I would, yes. And they have that setting where you can get rid of the numbers. And then, or shorten the list so it's not so many words. Yeah, they have some adjustments for that. Yes, you can turn off and turn off that feature, because sometimes what students do is it doesn't stop you from misspelling words, so you can type incorrect words and that incorrect word can come up. So sometimes you want that feature to be off. But it's very helpful to have like a person's name, or you can even type a whole address in there and have that appear, and it can learn that.
What about like if they're trying to say cart and they say cane? Like, is there some way where there's some like maybe common yourself?
Yes, and it does accommodate for that. Like you can spell a word phonetically, and it recognizes common errors, as long as it's a common error. It kind of depends. If it's a person's name, it may not get it, unless you teach it. You had a question in the front? I don't know. I actually don't know what the algorithm is, how it guesses words. Because this is one of the few word prediction that actually tries to predict as well. Not only does it know the word that you're typing, but the next word as well. I can sometimes just press 1111 because it keeps. Because first of all, it probably knows the sentence I'm trying to already write. I've written it before, but it will try to guess correctly what I'm trying to say because it's like this natural thing. I don't know. I don't know how it does it.
Yeah, I know. It's interesting. Yeah, but you end up hitting 1 or 2 so many times.
Right.
I'm sure if you're typing a difficult paper, that might be a different case. But just
for the students that we see and anyone who needs to use it because it's a great word for diction,
yeah.
That they end up just only doing ones and twos a lot.
Right.
It's nice that it learns how they're using things.
Right. And then WordQ has an add-on feature that allows you to use your voice as well. And this where this might be another place to get rid of some of the confusion. It also helps you type in a lot more words at once. So I'm just going to say, I can't remember the date. So let me turn on the microphone. Hello.
Hello.
My name is John Cavanaugh, period.
My name is John Cavanaugh.
So that's the only thing you have to allow it to do is mispronounce your name.
Never gets John's name.
But what you can see is that it gave me a few choices about what it's trying to guess. And the first one is...
My name is John Cavanaugh.
So that's more correct than the other ones. But what's interesting is I can say over the sentence. If it didn't even get that one correct, I could say it again and again and again and again until it gets it. What typical voice recognition does is it just doesn't care. It'll just write out whatever you want, or whatever you say, or whatever you cough, or whenever you talk to somebody else and forget to turn off the microphone. So this is great, and just for kids who just can't stop talking, and you know it's not appearing correctly, and I can slow them down. It's not writing a bunch of stuff on the screen. So that's the one I want.
My name is John Cavanaugh.
And you can see I still have to use my hands. It's not. A replacement for someone maybe who has a spinal cord injury. They have to be able to see it and they have to be able to click it. Today is January 20th, 2009.
Today is January 20th, 2009.
Today is January 20th.
Today is January 20th. Today is January 20th.
2009.
To cut.
2009. I'm not going to worry about that one. I'm just going to be happy just the fact that it got that far. I can train it to some extent. It's not as easy as Dragon Naturally Speaking. But what I do like about
another
this program...
of the fact that the plan to be happy to study guide of our own, I can.
I have a feeling that's why it got caught up on 2009. It was my computer's also kind of old. It's a little slow. What I do like about it is with the initial training is I have to speak in a story, but the person could actually do it independently. It reads off a phrase to you, and then you just echo it. Whereas with Dragon Naturally Speaking, I have to sit there by them as they're putting in their voice profile. And then I'll do what this does. I'll have to speak in the sentence, then they say it, and I speak in the next sentence, and they say it. Any questions about WordQ? I really love the program because not only does it help for people with learning disabilities, but it also helps people with one of my clients with cerebral palsy. It just, for some reason, Dragon was very scary for her, and it didn't work as well, but WordQ worked. Going up this list is Inspiration. Is everyone familiar with Inspiration? Inspiration allows you to organize your thoughts visually. So right now it has the main idea in the center of the screen, and the main idea is this bubble. And it's whatever you want to write about. What I love about, it's kind of small, and I'm trying to make it a little bit bigger. Zoom in.
And this is really great for project planning or even when you're trying to start your paper, which is the whole purpose of this.
Right.
For students that have a hard time composing papers because they have all this information in their head and they have difficulty actually getting it out or even writing it out. It's pretty difficult for them.
I'm going to show how I use it. Let's say if I want to do a brainstorm about places to eat. So I use this feature called Rapid Fire. You see that? So I click that on, and it's telling me it's working because it's this little red electric bolt. Denny's. What's the other one? I can just say Thai.
Yeah,
Thai food. I can do more subjects. Pizza. I can do a buffet. And then I can take So you can see as I press enter, it just adds more and more bubbles. Then I can take each bubble and do the same thing. So if I have it slow down. Yep. Oh well. I don't know why it's locked up, but it is. It might be conflicting with something, because I have Dragon open. I should have closed it. It's always that program is like, I love it and I hate it. But you can get the idea. With these bubbles, I can do more and more bubbles. I can do a whole web. I can actually, and there's these pictures over here, I can add those pictures into my web. The idea is, if I was writing notes for a class or for a test, the picture will help me associate to whatever it is I'm talking about. And I can make notes appear as well. Shoot. Where's that pointer? Right here is this button, outline. Can you see that? If I click the outline button, it changes it into a traditional outline where all the text is all lined up. So if your teacher or the student's teacher is asking for it to be in traditional style, not bubbles, they just click that button and it does it. Does that make sense? What I love about the program is that, there it's moving, is that it also has templates that teachers can use as well. Things that already have the bubbles already laid out, so maybe they're doing a book report and they have the author at the top and then they want to break it down by the chapters. So it's already set up for them. And that, those are free. And this program is so cheap, it's just like it's under $100. It's really, really, a really helpful program. Going up the list is Dragon Naturally Speaking, which is already running.
Has anyone used that before? Dragon Naturally Speaking? How was your success with it?
Actually, I use
DeckSpeech as well. Oh. Okay. Dragon, when we started, it was really poor. It was very difficult to use. So it's nice to see that Mac speech, when they're kind of basically their first outing with voice recognition, is pretty good already. So that's good. It's nice. Dragon can be very frustrating because you have to remember the commands. You have to make sure you're speaking to it in a certain way, in a particular cadence maybe. But once it's working, it works so, so well. I love this program. Let me see here. I'm just going to my microphone is on. It's up in the corner there. It's listening to me, but it's not doing anything. It's in a sleep mode. Listen to me. Start word. And I'll pause the mic so I can talk. Just so you know, I had to rename Microsoft Word. When Microsoft Word, when they came out with a new version, the title is Microsoft Word 2007 Office Suite. Or something like that. And so you have to say exactly those words in order to start the program. So I just said, start word. so that's one of the first things I do when I'm working with my clients. And what I'm pressing here is the pause button that turns on and off the microphone. My name is John Cavanaugh, period. I'm using voice recognition, period. Today is January 20th, 2009, period. Go to the beginning of document. Zoom to 150%. Select Y is. My name is. Go to sleep. Okay, so that worked pretty well. And usually, you can just read off a whole page, a whole paragraph, and just keep going and going and going. And then you have to make sure you do those few corrections like that. But you can actually have it speak to you. Sometimes I have it speak to me as I'm looking at my notes just to make sure I got it correctly. And I can start programs by voice, so you heard me start Word, but I can also make macros that start programs and then do other things. Like I can say, send this to Jane, and then it'll open up the send menu, open up Outlook, copy and paste it into the email and address it and wait for me to say, click send, and then it just does it. In this particular version, I have the professional version. There's a couple of different versions. The versions you usually see at Fry's or someplace like that is the preferred version. You can do everything that I'm showing you here today, except you can't do that macro I just talked about. Any questions about about this? I always forget. I'm sorry. The reason we recommend this is for clients who have spinal cord injuries, and it used to be the one I used to recommend for people with learning disabilities. But when WordQ came out, I just felt like that's an easier program to use.
Pretty severe carpal tunnel. Yeah. You know, where they can't. Their doctors put them on a restriction. They return to work, but they can't type or use a mouse. You know, right. Maybe. Only 10% of the time, so then we look at using voice recognition. And it gets a little tricky depending on where they work and what kind of system they're using. So we always work with then you kind of get a bigger group of people because it's the employee, the managers. Definitely IT gets involved in that. So whoever is involved, we have to get approval, and in addition to training the employee on it too. So we typically do between 10 to 15 to 20 hours of training just using voice recognition in their work site. You could definitely, like John was saying, get it at Fry's and put your voice profile on it and do email, that's fine. But when you're in a work situation and, you know, you're under kind of the pressure to get your work done and produce your work, then that's when we start going in and programming some macros.
Oh, and lastly, does everyone have Vista on their computer yet? Everyone's going, no way. Finally figured out the old one. And then all those problems that you keep hearing from about Vista. What I do love about Vista is it has built-in voice recognition. I don't have it on my computer here. I do want to play around with it a little bit more. It does work really well. So if you're ever curious about voice recognition, a real cheap way to try it is just to get, you know, upgrade your computer to Vista and get a nice microphone. Oh. Vista with Dragon? I like it. It has a different feel to it. I know Dragon so well that it's hard for me to use it. there's so much more things that are automatic with Dragon. But it's just so, it's like 10 to 100 times better than what it used to be. On the XP version, it was just like, it was gut-wrenchingly hard. And my clients, I would just have to convince them. It's like, just pay the $300 and get Dragon. But now, I don't feel bad at all recommending it for at least, you know, for people who want to just type out a quick email or type out a quick paper. Works really well. I'm going to show Kurzweil 3000. It's a reading program. It's helpful for people who have reading difficulties, and they have printed text in a book, and they want that read to them. And it's scanning software. So you connect up a scanner, it changes it into a TIFF or any kind of image file, and then converts that into readable text, and then reads it back to you. And because we're almost kind of running out of time, I'm just going to show something. I can't believe I did this, but it's the only thing I could think of that's kind of a practical use for me for using Kurzweil, is I have my HOA homeowner's emergency contact form. By the way, I do use Kurzweil when I want text read to me. It's just helpful when I've written out a lot of notes or I've written out a very important email or a very important letter, and I just need to hear it. And I don't have someone to read it for me. I'll just open up Kurzweil. But for people who have reading difficulties, and they're switching around letters in their heads, this is the program that they come to, they use.
Somerton Homeowners Association Information and Emergency Contact Form, homeowner name.
So you can kind of see how this works, right? It highlights the sentence, and then in a different color, it reads off each word. What I like about this program is there on this form, it's asking homeowner's name, email, unit address, and has these lines next to it. If I click a feature in here called fill in the blanks, it puts these little text boxes next to each line. So I can actually go in here and type it in. And I could be using any kind of word prediction program, anything like that, along with this. So Kurzweil can also read it to me as well. Or if this is a quiz that a teacher wrote, and they want to make sure, the student wants to make sure that the word that they chose to put in the blank fits in the sentence, they can just type it in and then have it read to them.
Email javano@yahoo.com.
So you can imagine if it's a sentence, they can actually hear the word in the sentence and make sure it's correct. Does that make sense? Everywhere else in this text, I can't type. So this is another thing that teachers like. It's not going to be like a Word file where they're typing, the student's typing, and it messes up what they've created. This looks like everybody else is in the classroom. They didn't make anything special for this special student who needed a little bit more help. This looks exactly like everybody else's. When they get it, it's actually going to be nicer because it's all typed out. There's a lot of nice features in here. If the student is trying to figure out the definition of a word, they can highlight it and click definition. Another box pops open and it shows them a definition of it.
Homeowner, noun, one who owns a home.
I've noticed some of the definitions are a little bit vague. So you can actually keep going in. If there's a word in there that you're not sure of, like if you're not sure of the word home, you can actually highlight that one and keep going in. I could actually select and copy and paste and put this into a blank document if I wanted, you know, made a word list and I had to make a paper based on these words. Okie doke. Yeah, I think we're good on time, so. Kurzweil 3000? That's marketed towards people with learning disabilities. But I've also recommended it for clients who had a high spinal cord injury and they had scanned books, but they couldn't turn the page themselves. This program was very helpful because it put the page up there, and if they had a switch, like we were showing you before, they can just click and switch or flip the pages. So it was also helpful in that instance for a physical disability, but it's mainly recommended for people with dyslexia and learning disabilities. No. No, I mean, they always have updates and upgrades every year that you want to get, but nothing like continually you have to pay for.
Yeah, and then some of these, actually most of these, except for Dragon, you can download a 30-day demo where it's pretty much fully working for 30 days. So we use that a lot for a lot of our clients because we can't have people decide, you know, in an hour if something's going to work or not. So we always recommend, you know, if we're there and they're at home and they have internet connection, that we can just download a demo and show them how to use it. But, yeah, there's not, like, a subscription rate per year because, yeah, manufacturers, they usually come out about every year, year and a half, there's some kind of upgrade. You can do what's like a service maintenance agreement. Before with some software where you pay $99 up front and that guarantees you the next version when it comes out, so you don't have to pay the full price.
And I think Bookshare.org, or an agency that you can get downloaded books for Kurzweil 3000, that's a subscription you pay for, but it's actually a very minimal fee. So nothing continual. Any questions? Oh, our information's on the bottom, the last page. I don't know how to switch it back over, but you see on the last slide is, you know, anytime you have a question or, I don't know, or if you wanted to bounce off an idea about a project or anything like that, we'd be happy to help. Oh, I didn't think about that. Yeah, that would be great. I always forget about Zoom text. And just a little background about our agency. We don't typically work with a lot of clients who have vision difficulties. We usually reserve that for Sensory Access Foundation. Their focus is assistive technology. It's just a technology for clients with vision difficulties because there's just so many more like kind of life encompassing things that they have to take care of. So it's just a really big field. But occasionally we have clients who not only have a reading difficulty because they're switching words around in their head, but they just need magnification or maybe a different colored background, and Zoom test can do that as well. So right when it turned on, it magnified everything on my screen two times the normal size. So I can keep clicking it.
2.3x, 4x, 5x.
And what's funny, some of our clients, they're convinced that they need this program, and then when they get it to the size that they actually need it, it's like this big, huge Z on the screen. And then, I mean, I think that's part of the evaluation process, right? It's just like they need to see, like, do you understand what we're talking about here? Maybe there's another program that might be more helpful for you. What's actually great about ZoomText is they've improved it so much that you actually can use it also not only as a magnification software, but also as a screen reading software. So even if the screen wasn't on, you could hear what ZoomText...
Desktop activated.
What ZoomText... what ZoomText is trying to show you if you move the if you knew how to move the focus around on the screen.
My computer, 2 of 14.
Yeah, I have a client that I'm shows with the she's using ZoomText with Dragon and Softype, which is an on-screen keyboard, and it's pretty tough doing training. She has pretty severe multiple sclerosis where her vision is affected, and what's kind of the harder part in the training is her memory's affected, so there's a lot of different components that, you know, I need to kind of keep in mind that I need to write things down, but write it down big enough so she could read it. But the nice thing is that she, Department of Rehab, purchased a 21-inch LCD monitor for her because she needed to increase it. I think this is 5 times, right?
Yeah.
So you can imagine she's not going to see too much on her screen, but with the 21-inch monitor, she's able to actually not magnify as high, still get a lot of text on the screen. So.
Yeah. No. It does something special to the fonts on the screen, and that to smooth them out the way they do. And that was some special technology they just introduced like a couple years ago.
So it's all just like the font they
display. This is just on the screen. Yeah. This is. I mean. Yeah. No. I mean, some. I mean, Kurzweil. No, it doesn't.
Not the pixels.
I mean,
it's gotten better where, like before, if you increase this, like even 5 times, the My Doc, it'd be very pixelated.
Right.
So that's gotten better.
10X.
I think if you scan something in,
Zoom text
I'm
enabled
not sure
button.
If it would do that.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, Kurzweil has two different OCRs in there. It does work a little bit differently. It'll scan it a little bit slowly, and so it gets more of the words. But they're focused more on the words, not on the pixels of the pictures. Yeah, it would be nice if they can kind of convert that over. Because this OCR just misses so many words that you just want them to get. But this is great the way this works, because it's just like Jane was saying. You can kind of see it in this actually this folder, how pixelated it is. Well, the words used to be that way, yeah, which I'm covering up. And it's just so much smoother and easier to see now. Yes, and I haven't really gotten to the features of it, but if you can click a hotkey and it'll actually focus the screen back onto the cursor. I can make the cursor bigger or a different color. I can make it a big like a big bullseye so the person knows where it is. And actually, that's a big issue. A lot of our clients, whether it's because of a neglect, they just don't look that direction, or it's because the cursor is just too small and they just can't see that darn thing. Just making those few little changes is actually very helpful for them. Let me see if I can actually do that.
1. Pointer and hand scheme menu, yellow with full cross. Pointer and hand.
I believe.
Giant green for shortcut.
Giant green. Okay, there it is. I believe it also, you can also set it so when you type, it disappears, so it's not always there.
Pointer and hand, scheme menu,
the software's
control
so nice,
key.
You can make all these changes to it, but then sometimes you can make so many changes to it, it gets overwhelming,
right.
You know, but it is nice that it's so customized for each client.
Right. Yep. And you can hear the reader.
Reader tab. Speech menu.
So I can anything I click on, it reads to me. I can turn that off. I can turn off the verbosity as well. What it was telling me was that this icon...
Desktop activated. My documents. 1 of 14.
So sometimes I just need to know it's my documents. I don't need to know that it's 1 of 14 and it's open. So you can turn that off just by using this key over here. Yeah. Yeah, so it's really... And you can also read the web. I really like the way you can open up a website and it will highlight the words as it's reading. It highlights the link so that you know it's a link. You can go to it. But, yeah, again, if there's anything we missed or if you actually want to come up afterwards and look at some of the equipment, a little bit more, I'd be happy to help.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
text,
you know, there's one,
Zoom
one more
text
thing I should, I should say. People like Jane and John, you know, really have a tough problem because they have to have knowledge, working knowledge of all these devices that are coming to them. And they have to have working knowledge of clients and success stories so that when they see a new client, they can say, you know, I've tried this on that. I've tried this before, and this might work, but this other thing might work too. So this is the only this is knowledge you gain only by experience.
Yeah.
You can't read this from any book, and the longer you're in this, the better you're going to get. So it's clear that Jane and John have been in this for a while and know what they're talking about. There's always every client is different, and even two people who have exactly the same disabilities might have two separate.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
Thanks again, and feel free to come down.
Yes.
Up close, and I'll see you guys on Thursday.
Should be cool.